Hello, and welcome to the Skeleton Factory Podcast.
Episode 71.
This is Adam, coming to you from Austin, Texas. And it is October. We are now in the most wonderful time of the year. Or at least until Christmas comes around. And on this episode, I'm going to be talking about some spooky horror movies. Movies that you can share with your friends, family, roommates, or strangers off the street. Go grab a stranger off the street, invite him into your home, and watch a horror movie with them. What's the worst that can happen? Besides them killing you and stealing anything in your house that has any value and burning the house down to cover up their grisly murder. Anyways, but first, I want to plug a little something here. On Tuesday, October the 17th, from 7 to 9, I will be hosting a horror and cult film trivia night here in Austin at a bar called Tweety's. Tweety's Bar, located at 2908 Fruth Street. That's F-R-U-T-H, Fruth Street. And this would be the first one I'm doing with Tweety's. And you can find Tweety's at tweedysbar.com. That's T-W-E-E-D-Y-S bar.com. How did this happen, Adam? Great question. I go to Tweety's frequently. That's sort of it's the bar I go to. You know, it's not too divey, but it has some kind of old Austin charm to it. Tweety's is an old house. The bar is a house, and it has a big backyard, big, you know, outdoor space where most people go and sit. I usually sit inside. I like to sit at the bar. It's not the type of bar that has 10 TVs with different sports games playing. You know, there's one small TV at the bar, and all they do is play movies. Pretty good movies, actually. And, you know, I was chatting up the bartenders one night, and the conversation of trivia nights came up. And it was brought up during conversation that it would be really neat if there was a trivia night that was something different than just general trivia. Not that there's anything wrong with just sort of general trivia nights at, you know, pub trivia, bar trivia. But something specific is not necessarily the norm, at least from what I can tell. I don't go to a ton of trivia nights at bars or anything. But for the most part, they throw a wide net in terms of questions. You know, sort of like old school trivia pursuit or, you know, something like that. And the conversation of like, hey, October's coming. It'd be cool if there was like a horror movie trivia night. And I was like, well, I can do that. I could easily do that. And the bartenders were like, great, give us your information and we'll get that going immediately. I was like, sure. Give my information. Then pretty much after as soon as I gave my information, I was like, oh God, what did I do? What have I done? But yeah, now that the ball is rolling, I'm really excited now. Because I have to basically create a game from scratch. I have to write out all these questions. I got to figure out in what order these questions are going to be asked. And I have to think of prizes to the winner. or winners. I have to think about things like, what if there's a tie? How do we have a tiebreaker? Things like that. And I think I have about 90% of the game completely figured out. And that other 10%, I have roughly, let's see, I have 2 weeks to figure out everything else. But I'm really looking forward to it. Again, that's going to be a horror and cult movie trivia night over at Tweety's Bar at 2908 Fruith Street here in Austin, Texas. That'll be on Tuesday, October the 17th, between 7 and 9 p.m. Come on down. Bring a team. Bring a team, especially people who know a lot about movies. And yes, there will be exciting prizes for the winner or winners. Okay? Cool. And while I'm here, I might as well tell you to head on over to Instagram. I'm at skeletons_factory. That's where I'm primarily at on social media. But I'm also on Twitter at SFPodcastATX. I'm also on Patreon at patreon.com/skeletonfactory. But I didn't come here to talk to you about that. I wanted to talk to you about horror movies, about the month of October. What's going on in the month of October? The new Exorcist film is coming out. I'm sure there's a midnight showing in the next hour. It's almost midnight right now as of this recording. Yeah, the new Exorcist film. Saw the trailer. Saw some of the promo stuff for it. Don't have a lot of high hopes for that movie. But I kind of want to watch it just to see how bad it is. Most movies that just look look uninteresting to me, I don't watch. Movies that look bad, I don't watch. But if something looks like I would enjoy how bad it is, I will watch. Especially if it's, you know, a mainstream movie in a theater. So I will report back after I've seen The Exorcist Believer. Anyways. But I wanted to recommend some movies on this episode that some of them are old, some of them are new. It's a nice little mix. Okay. The first couple of movies, the first two movies I want to recommend are At Midnight, I'll Take Your Soul, and This Night, I Possess Your Corpse, starring the character known as Coffin Joe. And who is Coffin Joe? Coffin Joe is the moniker in the English-speaking world of Brazilian horror icon Zé du Caixão. Did you hear how good my Portuguese was just there? It's because I am Portuguese, so. Yes, Coffin Joe, he's a spooky, gothic, undertaker, mortician man in a small Brazilian town. He's somewhere between, and I've had to think about this. I'm like, who does he remind me of? Like, what does his character remind me of? Because he's very specific. And I think I got it nailed down. He's somewhere between Steven Seagal and Anton LaVey. He's like somewhere in the middle. Okay. He's an imposing dark figure adorned in a top hat, black suit, cape, immaculate beard, and hideously long fingernails. And his fingernails are real. It's very disgusting. And this scary man's motives are to find the perfect woman to bear him a child, specifically a son, as he believes the most important thing in life is the continuity of his bloodline, to continue his bloodline. And he feels that his goal, because he fancies himself a superior individual, that his goal in life is to seek out the perfect woman to take his seed and make like the ultimate human, some kind of Brazilian Ubermensch or something. But unlike other psycho movie killers who only roam the shadows of the night, Coffin Joe also walks around in the daytime. And what is he doing when he's walking around in the daytime? Well, he's typically tormenting local villagers and bashing people's belief in God. That's a big thing. He shows up and just bashes people for being Catholic, as Brazil is quite the Catholic country. He occasionally rapes women. He occasionally maims and kills men. He also denies the supernatural, the existence of ghosts, the existence of God, spirits, fortune-telling, things of that nature. So he's an atheist. He's an atheist, he's pretentious, he's an elitist weirdo, and he's an asshole. He's my favorite type of person. And despite disliking most people, he does like children. Not in that way, okay? Children, he believes, are pure and free from the mental corruption of religious dogma. And he believes that they should be protected and they should be appreciated. And they're the most precious thing on earth. So, the first appearance of Coffin Joe was in 1964's At Midnight, I'll Take Your Soul, followed up by 1967's This Night, I'll Possess Your Corpse. And 1960s Catholic Brazil, you know, being an atheist was beyond blasphemous and offensive. Yet, Coffin Joe was and is a much celebrated sort of anti-hero. You know, he's what would I compare him to? What's like an American equivalent of Coffin Joe? You know, he's, I guess Freddy Krueger is a similar. You can draw some similarities between him and Freddy Krueger. But, you know, legions of fans of this spooky man grows every day, every year, and every decade. I like the movies. They're good. They appeal to my sensibilities. So let's just go ahead and jump into 1964's At Midnight, I'll Take Your Soul. Written and directed and starring Jose Mojica Marins as Coffin Joe, or Zé du Cachon. And this is like a vanity project for him. You know, a lot of vanity projects don't work out so well. But for him, you know, written, directed, and starring Jose Mojica Marins, he is Coffin Joe. And so Coffin Joe is a local mortician. He's married to an infertile woman, and he wants a son to continue his bloodline because he believes he is superior, and any son that is born of his loins will also be even that much more superior. So since his wife can't bear children, he ends up, And I'm making sort of a long story short, okay? Since his wife can't bear children, he kills her, makes it look like an accident, then sets his sights on his best friend's wife. So he kills his best friend, rapes his best friend's wife, and she ends up hanging herself. So after this, you know, the bodies start to stack up, and so does the growing suspicion and fear from the public. Because wherever he goes, people are very wary of him. And whoever kind of insults him or steps to him, they usually regret it. So Coffin Joe, still looking to satisfy his breeding fetish, let's call it, starts courting some other chick in town. But all these movies, they need some type of doomsayer, right? They need somebody who kind of... a prophet of doom, if you will, that reveals the downfall of our villain protagonist. This movie has a local gypsy fortune teller who tries to warn everyone that evil and darkness and dread and death is looming around every corner. And basically like Crazy Ralph from Friday the 13th. So the local gypsy fortune teller lady knows Coffin Joe is the local, like, serial killer. So she ends up cursing him. She says, forces from beyond the grave will come and take his soul at midnight. And that's basically the gist of At Midnight, I'll Take Your Soul. And I like At Midnight, I'll Take Your Soul. He's a weird character. You know, he's pretty awful, but he's also, he's oddly sympathetic, you know? I would be interested in seeing a modern, well, basically a remake or a reboot of some kind of At Midnight, I'll Take Your Soul or any of the Coffin Joe films. Like, get Gaspar Noé to do it, or Julia Ducournau, I don't know if I'm pronouncing her name right, to direct a remake. I think that would be really interesting. The movie's in black and white. It's spooky, and watching this movie will kind of help you appreciate other Coffin Joe movies, because this one seems kind of like someone's first movie. Okay, it's not quite as refined as the next movie, which is the sequel, which is On This Night I'll Possess Your Corpse from 1967. Once again, written, directed, and starring Jose Mojica Marins. And this sequel is a considerable jump in production quality. Big time. And Coffin Joe somehow returns from At Midnight, I'll Take Your Soul to continue his path to find a worthy baby mama. Which, I mean, it's suggested that he died at the end of the last movie. But, maybe he didn't, you know. So, he returns back in this movie. And he comes back along with his hunchback henchman named Bruno. And together they do things like capturing women, putting them through sick, torturous games. But instead of playing for their lives, they're playing for his dick. That's basically how the kind of first half of the movie is. And I mean, he's not particularly rapey. He's very particular and choosy in this movie. And I mean, once bitten, twice shy, right? He wants to make sure he can find the right woman this time around, because who wouldn't want to get finger blasted by Coffin Joe's 5-inch fingernails? Ugh. And mother his child. So, and an hour into the movie, Joe gets, okay, this is like the best part of the movie. Okay, the whole movie's in black and white, And about an hour in, Coffin Joe gets pulled into hell. Okay. And when he gets pulled into hell, it's like the Wizard of Oz. So, except while the first half of the movie is in black and white, and when Joe gets pulled into hell, it's in color. Bright, psychedelic, 1960s color. It's like a blacklight poster, okay? And I like the hell in this movie. It's so... Well, you know what it reminds me of? If you've ever been to the Santa Cruz Beach Boardwalk in California, they had this little ride called the Cave Train. And the Cave Train kind of follows this theme that the entire park had. I don't know how much it has now, but it had for a very long time, and especially when I was a kid. And there was like this caveman theme at the Santa Cruz Beach Boardwalk, right? So there was this very kind of like this, it looks like a gondola or something going over the entire length of the park. And it's basically this thing you can get on and ride it from one side of the park to the other. And some of the gondolas had like a statue of like a cartoon caveman sitting in the chair. So, you know, if you got into one of these things, there might be a caveman sitting next to you. And I remember that the Cave Train ride like vividly. It's like pitch black. It's a cave. And there's all these cavemen like doing weird things. There's the like, hey, here's some cavemen at a bar. And here's cavemen, you know, barbecuing a giant dinosaur leg and stuff like that. And I did look into it at one point, and I guess the whole caveman thing was in the 60s is when the Flintstones came out. And there was a period of time where the idea of like prehistoric cavemen and dinosaurs was like very popular, and the Santa Cruz Beach Boardwalk was sort of jumping on to that trend. So they made the Cave Train, where instead of having Fred Flintstone, they made their own version of kind of these cartoonish looking cavemen. Very strange, but it was, you know, the entire cave is lit with like black light. Like the entire thing looks like a three-dimensional blacklight poster. It's really trippy. I used to go there in high school with my friends, get stoned as fuck, and just go through the Cave Train. Anyways, it's not the point. But that's basically what hell looks like in this movie. So Coffin Joe is scared and horrified once he gets into hell. And he sees demons. These sort of, and by demons I mean they're like dudes who are painted completely like black. It's not like black face. It's like completely. It's like head to toe black face. It's like black body. Okay, and they look all oiled up. And they're like kind of like six. They're like jacked, but they're like 60s jacked, you know. And I guess they're supposed to represent demons, and these demons are walking around hell with like whips and pitchforks, and they're beating, stabbing, and torturing naked people who are chained to the cave-like walls of hell. Okay, there's like naked people like chained to the walls, chained to the floor, and they're just, these demons are walking around, and just, it's like everyone gets a stab from the trident. Everyone gets a lash from the whip. So you can just hear the sound of people screaming and moaning the whole time Coffin Joe is visiting the 60s psychedelic hell. And the deeper he goes, you know, the more screaming and moaning and even, I don't know, it's almost like It's almost like someone looked at like some Hieronymus Bosch paintings and was like, let's do that. So he's going through the caves and you would see things like body parts sticking out of the ceiling. You know, like you'd have a leg and an arm, some dude's head. And you just see a pair of boobs just sticking through the ceiling. And they're real, you know, they're like, they're still moving and everything, but they're protruding out of the walls, you know, and out of the stone floor, quote unquote. Very weird. Okay. And there's even like people who are crucified and crawling. They're like crawling with snakes while crucified. You know, it's a weird hell. But overall, I thought it was really cool. I think the depiction of hell was very cool. And I didn't, you know, when you see this movie, you don't really expect it to go from black and white to color. So when it does happen, it's like, oh, that's a nice little switch it up type of thing. And overall, the nudity in this movie is a lot better. Okay. All the women in this movie are a lot hotter than the first movie. So that's another plus. But in the end, Coffin Joe eventually is chased down. He ends up getting back to Earth, right? He ends up leaving hell. But in the end, he ends up getting chased down by a torch-wielding mob. You know, and he dies. Or does he? You know, he doesn't die. Spoilers. So, and that's kind of how the movie ends, right? He ends by all the villagers not taking a shit no more, hunting him down and killing him. So, and I like this movie. I think it's really good. It's kind of rare that you see the part two, you know, the sequel of anything being better than the original. So also the acting overall is much better and at times much worse, but for the most part it's better acting. The story is fine. The sets are way better. The first movie was very cheap. It was like Ed Wood cheap, but the sets are much better, especially the hell set. The hell set was great. There are more Coffin Joe movies, but I'll save talking about those for another time. So I would definitely say go check out On This Night I'll Possess Your Corpse. Yes, and there's a bunch of Coffin Joe movies. There's documentaries about Coffin Joe, well, specifically Jose Mojica Marin's. Go check it out. It's really good stuff. It's fun. It's got great kind of gothic sensibilities. It's, you know, it's got a real sense of folklore. It's got a sense of satire kind of running through it. He's like Patrick Bateman or something, you know? You know, not exactly like Patrick Bateman, but he's, you know, he's somebody who's like, it's like he has a philosophy. You know, he doesn't have magical powers per se or anything like that, but he's dangerous. You know, it's definitely, I definitely recommend it for the Halloween season. So, and the final Coffin Joe movie, and there is, there's been a few releases of the Coffin Joe trilogy. The final movie was called Embodiment of Evil. That came out in 2008, I believe. And it's not bad for what it is. You know, it knows what it is. It's sleazy. It's raunchy. It's violent. But with enough tongue-in-cheek, it winks at the audience. It lets us know it's a movie. So I recommend Embodiment of Evil as well. I mean, if you already watched the first two movies, you might as well watch the third one too. And it actually wraps up Coffin Joe's kind of story, really. He actually has like a character. All these movies are leading somewhere. You know, it's kind of similar to, I don't know, The Omen, maybe. The Omen films. You know, because most, like, bad guy slasher stories, they're usually pretty self-contained in whatever movie, and then the next movie is, you know, they're like, oh, even though he died in the next movie, we brought him back somehow because we need to make another movie, so we'll come up with a reason to bring him back from the dead, you know? But Embodiment of Evil is kind of a nice final chapter to the Coffin Joe, you know, series. So that is something kind of old. Okay, now we're going to jump to something that's rather new. Okay, and that would be the film Men from 2022, directed by Alex Garland, starring Jesse Buckley, who I haven't really recognized her from anything else besides she was in Chernobyl. If you've seen Chernobyl, she is in there. But Men, I wasn't really paying attention to it when it came out. I remember seeing the trailer for it when it came out last year, but I never got around to it, and I just got around to it recently. And I liked Men a lot. I thought it was something fresh. It was something different. It was really carving out its own path in terms of what a horror movie is, what a suspense, you know, a suspense and thriller of a horror movie, but has elements of the supernatural kind of weaved into it. Again, another movie that the whole time, you know, for whether, you know, there's a relatively normal scene happening or a very absurd, over the top, obviously not real scene, you know, everything was handled with a lot of skill and care. And so Men is about a lady named Harper who is taking a relaxing vacation in a rural English countryside town. Okay, it's kind of an Airbnb type situation, staying in this lovely old house. And she's staying there after having quite the bad breakup with her ex-husband, James. Okay. Now, how bad was this breakup with James? Well, it was pretty bad. So we get some flashback where after telling James that she wants to divorce him, James tells Harper that he will kill himself if she divorces him. And it'll be her fault, and she'll have to carry the guilt forever and ever and ever and ever. Which is, that's a fucked up thing to do to somebody. It's one thing if you're suicidal. It's another thing if you tell somebody, you know, you have to remain in a marriage with me, otherwise I will kill myself. And if I kill myself, I'm just letting you know that it'll be because it's your fault. Like, that's not a good thing to do to somebody that you supposedly love. So, after this, James, and they're in an argument. Okay, she's basically telling him that she doesn't love him anymore and wants a divorce. James loses his shit and punches Harper in the face. And she in turn loses her shit and kicks him out of the apartment. You know, he seems like he was momentarily sorry for what he did, but things happened too quickly. He closed fist punched a woman in the square in the face. It's like, you know, once she was able to get to her feet and blood's dripping out of her face, she basically pushes him out the front door, locks it. So not long after this, she walks over to the window of the apartment and blood is still leaking out of her nostrils when all of a sudden she sees James falling past the window. And everything kind of like goes into slow motion. So he's falling in slow motion past the window. And she locks eyes with him. She sees his face. So James actually ended up killing himself like immediately after. James, his horribly broken body is impaled on this like spiky iron fence down at street level. So James killed himself. And now she has all this shit that he put in her head sort of weighing on her mind, okay? So she's like, I need to get the fuck out of town. I need to go somewhere quiet where I can be alone. So Harper is, she's tormented by the reoccurring image of James's face as he fell past the window. So once she gets to this little town, it's small. I mean, there's probably less than a couple hundred people in this little country town. So everyone in this small town who's a man, and the town is mostly men, is played by the same actor, okay? The actor of Rory Kinnear, who I only recognize as the character of Bill Tanner from the Daniel Craig James Bond movies. He's in, I think, every Daniel Craig James Bond movie. But he plays everyone, okay? He plays the guy who is renting the house out to her. He plays, you know, the local police. He's the local bartender. He's all the guys hanging out at the pub. He even plays a little boy who's probably, I don't know, 12, maybe 13 years old. Not the best CG, because they just kind of deep faked this guy's face onto a like 12-year-old boy's body. But I was, you know, the movie's written so well, I was able to just kind of look past that. I'm like, I get what they're doing. It's fine. But while Harper is in this little town, she realizes that everyone she interacts with is seemingly fairly normal until she gets into conversation with them and realizes there's something a little off about everybody. Okay, so she's the house that she's staying in is not far away from the woods. She takes this walk in the woods. It's very pretty out there. And she comes across this long, empty tunnel that looks like it's been abandoned for who knows how long. And she's walking through there and she kind of tests how echoey the tunnel is. And there's this scene where she's kind of playing around with how echoey the tunnel is. She's kind of singing into it. And you can see right through the tunnel. The tunnel's just completely pitch black, but you can see the end of the tunnel. You can see the light where it ends. And at one point, as she's walking through it, you can see the silhouette of what looks like a man on the other side of the tunnel. Okay, he kind of stands up and then starts running towards her. Now, the tunnel's pretty far. You know, it's probably 100 yards or something like that. You just see the shadow of this man starting to run towards her. So she sees this and she backs out and goes back the way she came. And the guy at one point starts screaming this horrible, terrifying scream. So she has to run back into the woods and get back to her house. And eventually eventually she realizes she's being followed by this naked man. Is it the same man she saw at the end of the tunnel? Maybe, maybe not. But she realizes that the property she's staying on, there's this naked man walking around on the property. She ends up calling the police. Police come, take the man away. And then the naked man is also played by Rory Kinnear. Like I said, he's everybody. Except one cop. One of the two cops that shows up at the house is played by just some woman. But everyone else is Rory Kinnear, basically. So she realizes as things start to move on that basically everything falls into this sort of folklore fairy tale. Like the reality kind of gets sucked out of the movie slowly. It just kind of starts to dissolve away. And there's really great elements of gothic and pagan, like, embellishments sprinkled around, but with modern sensibilities in mind. There's a lot of biblical references and metaphors, which always work to add an unknown kind of sense of danger in movies like this when done well, and this movie does do it well. I'd say if you like the movie Lamb from 2021, starring Naomi Rapace. And what else? Oh, if you like what I consider to be the best psychological horror thriller of 2022, Watcher. You know, if you like Lamb, if you like Watcher, I think you'll really like Men. And I've heard this movie compared to Darren Aronofsky's Mother, which I haven't seen, but I also have, like, no interest in seeing it. Not the biggest Darren Aronofsky fan, so I'm not super up on his stuff. But if generic slasher films, found footage films, jump scare movies really aren't your thing, then check out Men. You know, it's well acted. You know, it has great visuals, great cinematography. It's an entertaining, slow burn with well-placed gore effects and some unique and jarring body horror that just really hits really great. And a lot of that stuff it's really earned. A lot of the more horrifying things are kind of pushed towards the end of the movie, so the movie has time to kind of open up. Okay, you can kind of you get the sense of paranoia, you get the sense of that Harper came to this place to find some kind of refuge, but really now she has a whole other set of problems and fears coming at her. So by the time, you know, all the kind of fun, horrifying special effects stuff happens, it's tucked in at the kind of final third of the film. And it's great. It's like a nice espresso after a good dinner. It's great. So I would say check it out. Men from 2022. I believe it's an A24 film, if you're into A24 films. And I would say, you know, it's a good movie to watch with a group of people. It's weird. There's some things that are just not going to be explained, not going to make sense. A lot of things are symbolic, but not in a way that's complete nonsense. You know, like Skinamarink or Ennis Men, which is a film I tried to watch and it was boring and I didn't understand it. But the movie Men, not Ennis Men, but Men, totally recommend. I think between that and the Coffin Joe films, you'll have yourself a great movie night. So, if you're watching a lot of movies back to back to back to back to back to back to back, like sometimes I do, like when I was watching the Coffin Joe movies, I watched three Coffin Joe movies. I watched Ennis Men. I watched Men. I was also watching the Omen series over again. I watched Omen 1 and 2, which I think are fine. I like 1 and 2. But 3 seems like something, a movie I should like, you know, and Sam Neill stars in it as a grown up, you know, Damien. But fuck, that movie's really boring and the end is stupid. You know, what else did I watch? I watched DEFCON 4. That almost made it to this show, to this episode, but I just was like, no. I don't think I'm going to bore people with some post-apocalyptic movie. Post-apocalyptic movies are a hard sell, I find. You know, post-apocalyptic movies, you know, they kind of had a, they had a bit of a heyday, you know, in the 80s. And they just kind of went away after a while. And every once in a while, you get something that's really interesting, you know, like The Road or something like that. Or, you know, I feel like, you know, a lot of modern zombie stuff does a pretty good job of that. Or if you're, you know, but that's zombie movies, but they have that sort of post-apocalyptic kind of feel to them, you know, like The Last of Us or whatever. But when I'm just watching movie after movie after movie, I usually have to take a break at some point. And I actually, what I like to watch, my sort of in-between viewing, and I brought this up on other episodes, but I'm going to bring it up again. I will watch reruns of a show called Kenny versus Spenny. Kenny versus Spenny. Okay, it was a Canadian, I guess you would call it a reality TV show, but it was played for comedy. It was very simple premise, okay? You have two best friends, okay, Kenny and Spenny, okay? Kenny Hotz and Spencer Rice. They live in a house in Toronto, Canada, because it's a Canadian TV show. And every week, they will have some type of competition against each other. So they'll participate in a competition against each other, and whoever loses the competition has to perform an act of humiliation that's designated by whoever wins. Okay? So, I guess it's kind of tucked into the era of like Tom Green Show, Jackass, like shows like that. But Kenny versus Spenny is different. It's a totally different flavor, and it's childish, it's immature, it is vulgar, it's insensitive, especially by today's standards. It's kind of maddening how, you know, you think over time, like, I don't know, this people would lighten up. But no, it's always the thing of like, oh, you can't say this or you can't say that anymore. You know, and Kenny versus Spenny is like, ooh, there's a lot of stuff going on in that show that you just can't say or do anymore. But I love it. I think the show is amazing. But I really thought about it. I'm like, what's a good entry point for Kenny versus Spenny? And I would recommend, let's see. Okay, so there's an episode where there were like, it was basically an episode where it's who could have a dead octopus on their head the longest. Okay, so they go to a fish market, they get a, go buy a dead octopus, and they would put the octopus on their head. and they would just have to keep it there. And whoever takes theirs off first loses. That's a really good episode. It's a great episode. I love it. And there's one called Who Can Hold a Dump in Their Pants the Longest? So they basically both put on diapers, and they both have to take a shit in the diaper. And then once the shit has been established and confirmed by the other player, then it becomes a game of attrition. It's like who can go longer just with shit in their pants. And it sounds disgusting. It is disgusting, but the show is edited and presented in such a way where it's very funny. Now, Spinny is more of the straight-laced, wants to just play the game as the rules indicate. You know, he's kind of self-righteous, but he's kind of a do-gooder, goody-goody, neurotic kind of guy. And Kenny is the wisecracking, more, you know, he talks to the camera more, you know, he looks at the audience and, you know, wants to, he's probably a little bit more relatable. And, but, Kenny also cheats constantly. Like most episodes, he finds a way to manipulate the situation where he wins and Spenny loses and Spenny has to perform a humiliation. So, what else is really good episodes? Okay, first of all, before I go any further, if you want to watch Kenny versus Spinny, the best place to go is to YouTube. Look up Kenny Hotz's YouTube page, okay? His name is Kenny Hotz. H-O-T-Z. Hotz. He has posted almost every episode. There's only like a couple that are just like, YouTube is just not going to let be on YouTube, but almost every single episode is there. Also, there's commentary tracks for a lot of the episodes, and there's some other stuff too. There's some like Q&A videos, but almost every episode of Kenny versus Spinny is there. So let's review. Who can keep an octopus on their head the longest? Who can hold a dump in their pants the longest? There's an episode, I think it's just called Fart. And it's, well, actually, I think the full title is Who Could Blow the Biggest Fart. That's a very funny episode. There's a lot of great episodes, but that's what I watch in between watching movies. Because I can sit through two or three movies at a time. Just one after the other, but at some point I need to take a little intermission. And if you ever find yourself in that position, or it's maybe it's the end of the night, maybe you watched a bunch of movies, you're like, okay, I need to wind down because I'm going to go to bed soon. That's what I do when I'm like, okay, I'm done watching movies. I need to smoke some weed, have some wine with the wife, drink some wine, smoke some marijuana, you know, turn the lights off, you know, put our phones away and just kind of veg out a little bit, you know, something to kind of get sleepy and doze off to on the couch. Kenny versus Spinny is amazing for that. All right. This will not be the last time I talk about Kenny versus Spinny, believe me. But yes, please go check out the Coffin Joe films at midnight. I'll take your soul. And this night I possess your corpse. And check out the movie Men. If you just don't have the patience or whatever, if you just have an aversion to watching black and white movies, you know, watch Men. That's a brand spanking new, very high-tech movie. And it's really good. It's really interesting. I'm sure it beats the hell out of Exorcist Believer or whatever else is coming out. I heard they're making a part two, a sequel to Black Phone. Ugh. It's like that movie's terrible. That movie is like if an AI computer was asked to make a horror movie, it would make Black Phone. So of course they're making a goddamn sequel to it. That came out the same week as Watcher. So, you know, but Watcher didn't have the marketing budget that Black Phone did, so no one watched Watcher. But watch Watcher from 2022. It's a fascinating, great slow burn of a movie, okay? It'll have you crawling the walls with anxiety. Well, join me next time when I will be talking about the criminally underrated, absolutely fantastic, amazing, amazing, amazing film, The Devils. The Ken Russell film from 1971 starring Oliver Reed and Vanessa Redgrave. Absolutely amazing film. Go watch it now. Go. It's not even streaming anywhere. So you have to rather find a physical copy, or you can go to, this is what you do. Go to archive.org. And you can find, you can find a really good copy of The Devils on archive.org. Okay, watch that movie, because I'm definitely going to be talking about it next episode. I'll be talking about a bunch of other stuff too, but I just wanted to prep you for the next episode. Go watch The Devils, the Ken Russell film. It's absolutely amazing on so many different levels, okay? Well, guys, this is the Skeleton Factory Podcast, rescuing your movie night one movie at a time. I am Adam, and I will catch you all on the next one. Bye-bye.